Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello, and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to spend time with you sharing those amazing sparks that could be the catalyst to make that positive change you desire in your life. Hopefully, you've had a chance to take action on something you heard last week about increasing gratitude practices in your life. And I want to remind you that next week's guest, we've rescheduled Marianne Hess. We'll be talking about the Amazon rainforest and the rainforest projects. And so please mark that on your calendar. And I'm very excited to share with you tonight Ms. Becky McCrary. Becky is the Carol Burnett of conventions. She's known as, and she's also a nationally recognized expert on customer service and relationship networking. And tonight we're going to focus on relationship networking, and we'll also explore a bit about customer service. She has 20 years in banking prior to beginning her professional speaking career a little over a decade ago. I'm going to let Becky tell you more about herself, but I will share that one of her core messages, and I love this quote, is people will talk about you. The good news is you get to write the scripts. Welcome, Becky.
Hey, Melanie, it's nice to be with you.
I am so glad that I'm finally able to share you and your wonderful tools and strategies with my listeners. And what would you like them to know about Ms. Becky McCrary?
You know, Melanie, the answer to that question always depends on who the audience is. So let me just kind of give you a brief overview. I did spend 20 years in banking. I was a teller. I did new accounts. I was a consumer loan officer and a mortgage loan officer. I managed the call center. I was a branch manager and a business development manager. And I know that some people are thinking, oh my gosh, the woman cannot keep a job. But honestly, that wasn't necessarily why. I was married to the military, and we moved around a lot. I could always get a job as an experienced teller with an exemplary balancing record. And just had the opportunity to experience a lot in banking. My husband's company moved us to Greenville, South Carolina, and I walked right into a position as a branch manager here. And about 6 months later, Melanie realized that on a regular basis, my CEO did not take her medication. You never knew who was coming in to work. It could be Dr. Jekyll. It could be Mrs. Hyde. In any case, after 6 months in a brand new town, I quit my job, having never given a speech in my life, and said, I'm going to be a professional speaker. That was a little over 13 years ago. It's been an incredible ride. But I think that the crowning glory to all of that happened this past July 2009, in Phoenix, Arizona, at the National Speakers Association's annual convention. I walked across the stage to the wild applause of 2,000 of my close personal friends, my husband, my mama, and my daddy, and accepted the Certified Speaking Professional credential, which is the highest earned designation in the speaking industry. So it's just, I'm still on cloud nine. I need two faces to grin. And I earned that by traveling all over the country and just sharing my wit and wisdom, a lot of customer service, a lot of relationship networking, a lot of attitudes in the workplace and a passion for your profession. And my clients loved me, invited me back, and helped me to earn that.
Well, congratulations.
Oh,
that
thank
is
you.
A wonderful honor. I'm so excited for you.
It's been so cool. It really has. Now, understand, I'm here in South Carolina, and there's the local chapter of the National Speakers Association covers actually North and South Carolina. And this is a group of professionals where there's a good penetration of certified speaking professionals. Some chapters don't have any at all. And we probably have about 12 in the Carolinas. But even with so many others who have been there, done that, got the T-shirt and the medallion, there is still a lot of welcome to the club type of an attitude from them. So it is very exciting.
Wonderful. Well, on that, we'll come back and revisit the National Speakers Association later in the interview.
Yes.
With one of our planned questions, because for a number of people, they've considered becoming speakers. But before that, even, to be successful in a variety of professions, it truly helps to understand how to network well. And I have to say that even though I was doing some things well when I read your book, let me tell you, I have a whole list of more things to do.
Oh.
So thank you very much.
Well, it's my privilege to share.
Oh, well, good. The experience that you've had on your journey, you've already said that you were married to the military. So was the key turning point for you in entering the field of speaking and training the situation in your last position as an employee in a financial?
Oh, absolutely. I would never have imagined myself doing anything else. I was always very good in math. I enjoyed meeting people and could work out budgets for them. I really enjoyed the opportunity that I had to be a lender, because you really did have an opportunity there to put people in a better financial situation. So if things would have continued, I would never have dreamed of the type of career that I have had the last 13 years. And honestly, to take it back just 6 months before that, I was managing a call center for a financial institution and had been there for about 5 years when I applied for a position as a branch manager that would have been a promotion for me, and I didn't get it, which shocked me and everybody else, you know. If I had gotten that promotion, Melanie, I would have still been in Sumter at that financial institution. I know that. But see, God knew so much better than Becky did what was in store for me. And we just took one leap of faith after another, and it landed us here. So it's been really exciting. But everything that I do, everything that I have become, really does go back to that place when I was in the call center. You know, people are really funny about their money. You may know that, Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to handle them very delicately. And like, they'll call on Monday wanting to know what you did with their money while you were closed, you know, over the weekend.
Oh, my.
Or they'll call and ask, what's my balance? And, you know, sometimes you just wanted to ask, what do you think it is? You know, and but I loved what we were able to accomplish there, because when I took that position, we were averaging, we had 60,000 members worldwide, and we were averaging about 60 complaints a month. So 60 times a month, after things were taken care of, the caller would say, I am not happy. I want a letter of apology from your supervisor or from the CEO. And I learned everything I knew about that company from handling complaints. Well, when I left there after 5 years, we were taking one complaint a quarter.
Oh my gosh.
It was incredible. And they didn't let me eliminate a single federal regulation. I tried. You know, some of them just didn't make a lot of sense to me. And yet I had to work within those guidelines, and it really all came back to how you treat people.
Oh,
it
yes.
comes back to listening. It comes back to word choice. And when I walked out of my last position and said, I'm going to be a speaker, I developed one program that took me an hour and 10 minutes to deliver on telephone etiquette. That was the only program that I had. So people would hear me and love me and want me to come back, and I didn't have anything else. I didn't know anything else. And so they'd say, you know, what else you got? And I'd say, what else do you want?
There you go.
Just over the years, you know, somebody would say, well, I love the telephone etiquette, but we have a lot of face-to-face people. And it's like, okay. And all of that kind of worked into the customer service. And then somebody would say, well, you know, what about sales? Well, I don't do sales. Well, yes, you do. No, and we did this back and forth and finally determined that I actually do sales. And for those people who say, I am not a salesman, how do you sell? And you know, in financial institutions, that is a huge area of interest because many of the employees don't see themselves as salesmen, and yet they are the experts that have to be able to convey the tools that they have available for their customers and members to use to put themselves in a better situation. So it just worked over the years and developed other programs. But I'll tell you, Melanie, my all-time favorite, how a brand-new program started, was a group of insurance women, because, you got to love them, because Mama said. They did a regional conference here in Greenville, South Carolina, and they called me and asked me to be their luncheon speaker at their awards celebration. And I said, well, oh, this is wonderful. They were like from 8 states and Puerto Rico, and about 225 of the chapter leaders from those states. And I said, well, what do you want me to speak on? And they said, oh, anything you want. I said, well, let's do relationship networking, because honestly, I see a lot of women are not able to do that. They don't know how to ask for the business, and they don't know how to enlarge their circle of influence. And they said, oh, that'll be wonderful. So I get to the hotel where the conference is going on. I have about 45 minutes before I'm supposed to speak, and I'm just meeting some of the participants and you know, making them already feel good about their choice to have me. And one of them said, would you like to see our program? Well, I would love to see the program. And I looked at it, and, you know, I'm looking, it was like, they'd been there 3 days, so I'm looking at all the things they've been talking about. And then it gets to the current date, and I look down, and it gets to the luncheon, and it says, Becky McCreary, Leadership in a Nutshell.
Oh, no.
Melanie, I had never spoken on leadership in my life. Never. I had 45 minutes while I was sitting at the table with the national president and the presidents from the 8 chapters to craft a 45-minute speech on a topic I'd never done before. It was so much fun. They were slapping the tables. They were laughing so hard. And to this day, I have no idea what I said. But it has created a whole other topic.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those little turning points when somebody else says, Becky, you can do this, and you had no idea that you could do it. And yet, how many of us, Melanie, honestly, when somebody says, oh, I want you to do this, and we've never done that, never even thought we wanted to do that, do we say, no, I'm not the one that you want for that. There's
that
somebody
fear.
Else who's better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I believe we have so much power inside of us that if we would just allow ourselves to be great, we can't imagine what our lives and our careers and our families and our communities could be like if we would just allow ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. If we would get out of our own way.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Which and I did mark to talk about fear, which is in one of the later chapters of the book. You also, and I left this out of the introduction, I have a big note over here. Your book is called Relationship Networking on Purpose. And on the cover, now it's, the description is a step-by-step plan to move you from the comfort of the wall into the power, action, and business that is found in the center of the room. And under your name, where it says by Becky McCrary, it says, dot, 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 a recovering wallflower.
Absolutely.
How did that title come about?
Melanie, for your listeners that aren't familiar with the term wallflower, because honestly, I meet people from time to time that don't know what I'm talking about. A wallflower is typically someone who is most comfortable standing against the wall, watching people. They watch the room. They watch the influence. They watch the fun, and they don't know how to step into that. Well, I grew up absolutely a wallflower. I was a people watcher, and I had nothing to say. And the biggest reason I had nothing to say, Melanie, is because I stuttered. Until I was 31 years old, I couldn't make eye contact with a stranger and speak because my fluency disorder was in, I would open my mouth and nothing would come out. In my mind, I was trying to push out a word, but my mouth couldn't make the sounds. And so it would be one of those, and words would not come. Well, when I was 31 years old, my son, I have two children. My son, Troy, is my older child, and he was such an easy baby that 2 years later, I thought, let's do this again. And I got Laura. If Laura had been born first, she would have been an only child. You understand the concept.
I do.
Yes. Well, you know, you want the world for your children,
mm-hmm.
and you're willing to do most anything for them. Well, when I was 31 years old, Troy began to stutter. And all of a sudden, that cross that I was perfectly willing to carry for myself was something way too heavy for him. And in Sumter, South Carolina, I found a speech therapist. Who knew there was speech therapist back way back when, and that they could actually help Troy, but Troy went every week for his appointment, and when he would finish with his therapy, he and the therapist would come out into the waiting room where I was waiting, and she would give me my homework assignment. And it was just learning how to help him gain fluency that I began to gain fluency for myself. And my husband says that's why I haven't shut up since. You know, I've got so much time to make up for. But I very much was in awe of how different business was when you could talk to strangers. And so many times, you know, we walk into a room that's full of strangers, and the first thing we do is we stand there and we look around for somebody that's familiar. And then we go and attach ourselves to her hip so that we've got somebody to talk to and pal around with instead of developing the skills that are necessary to walk up to a total stranger and introduce yourself and make small talk that gives you an opening to introduce what you do, who you do that for, and to be able to identify the needs that individual may have that you could meet. So that's where I am still a wallflower, but I'm in recovery. Yeah, just one meeting away from blending right back into the wallpaper again. But honestly, it is so much fun to talk. It's so much fun to meet people. And sometimes, you know, they're not a good prospect for me, but they have a need, and I know somebody else who can meet that need, and so I get to be a matchmaker. I get to introduce them to business associates that can do things for them. You know, if you need a plumber, Melanie, you don't want me. I mean, I know you're shocked, but let's just put it out there. You do not need Becky. And yet, do you think Becky knows plumbers?
Oh, I would say possibly, yes.
Of course I do, especially those here in Greenville, South Carolina. So, you know, it's all about being able to make connections. Yeah.
And those personal referrals carry so much more weight than just saying, oh, well, if you go to the Yellow Pages and look up, or you go online and you, yeah, I'd much rather hear about the great experience that Becky had.
Absolutely.
What motivated you to write the book about networking? Because you said that became one of the programs that you offer on relationship networking. Why the book?
Well, the book came about because people would go to the seminar and they just couldn't get it all in one sitting. You know, there were so many aha moments for people. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't do that, or oh my gosh, I do that and I ought not to. And so it got to the point where people were saying, now tell me again about this. Emailing me, calling me. Okay, I did this. It didn't work out like I had expected. What did I do wrong? What else can I do? And so I began coaching people through networking opportunities, and just their questions prompted the book.
Well, let's talk about some of those ideas in the book. Like I said, there are so many practical to-dos in here. And just starting with the first chapter on be prepared. Like, most people would not even think about where they put a name tag, for example.
Oh.
I know I was putting it in the wrong place till I read your book. You want
to
talk about
seriously?
That? Yeah. Exactly for the reason that you said. Because we don't think about it. So why is it important about where you put your name tag, Becky?
Oh, well, the most important reason for having your name tag on your right, on the right side, just underneath the collarbone, is because whether we're left-handed or right-handed, we typically shake hands with our right hands. And so if you extend your right hand to someone, their eyes naturally go to the hand to make sure that they connect with it. You know, you don't want your hand just out there flapping in the breeze, so to speak.
Right.
So your eyes go to the hand, then they go straight up the arm to the shoulder where the name tag is, where they can see your name. Then they can move their eyes onto your face to make eye contact. But if your name tag is on the left side, then their eyes naturally go right up from your right hand to your right arm to the right shoulder to the face. But then they're pulled away from your face looking for your name, because so many times networking opportunities are noisy. There's a lot of people talking. Sometimes they even hire live music. And it's like, why would you put live music in a networking opportunity? Because somebody thought it was classy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in its place. But if I'm talking to you and you tell me that your name is Phil and I think it's Bill, I need to see your name tag in order to cement in my mind what your name is. So you want it on the right side, just underneath your collarbone, not clipped to your breast pocket, not clipped to your neckline, not hung on a lanyard around your neck where it hangs down just about to the navel, because that's not where you want their attention drawn when they are shaking hands with you. So it's about making the other person feel comfortable.
Well, and speaking of handshakes, you also have some tips about handshakes. Would you like to share some of those?
Oh, sure. You know, bless their hearts, so many gentlemen think that women are slight, that they are fragile, that they're breakable. And so when a gentleman extends his hand or goes to shake hands with a woman, many times he stops at her first knuckle. and you just get this little limp wag, you know, and it doesn't make a good impression. And other folks, you know, perhaps they've been walking around in the room. The first thing they did was they went to get a drink. Well, they're carrying that drink around in their right hand. Then they meet someone and they need to shake hands, so they put that cold, wet glass from their right hand into their left hand, and then they're going to shake hands with you. Well, what is their hand? It is cold. It is wet. You don't want that. So then they stand there and wipe their hand on their pants, and you know, if you just plan ahead, this can be so much easier. Little things like, if you're going to have something to drink, carry it in your left hand. Or even better, get it, drink it, put the glass down someplace, and don't walk around with it in your hand. But then when you go to shake hands, extend your right hand, and you'll extend it. You don't want to straighten your elbow. You want your elbow still bent slightly. But when you shake hands with someone, you want to do what I call go for the groove. And the groove is that place right between your thumb and your index finger, all the way in there, so that when your groove there matches up with my groove, you see how easy that is?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get a quick shake, two pumps, and turn it loose. You don't stand there and pump like you're priming, you know, a pump for water. That, boy, that really shows my age, doesn't it? And you don't stand there and hold somebody's hand the whole time you're talking to them. Two pumps, turn it loose. Make a great impression.
Okay. That's helpful, yes. Otherwise, yeah, you do risk dropping the drink or having the impression that you make with that person you've just met as being one of wet fish. And that's not always good either.
It's never good, Melanie.
Now, if they have a sense of humor, it may be memorable. However.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. It'll be memorable. But is it a good memory? Because
right.
That's really what you're aiming for.
Absolutely.
Remember, people are going to talk about you. The good news is you get to write the script. What do you want them to say?
Yes, and what is it we want them to be seeing?
That's right.
You mentioned circle of influence earlier in our conversation. And you talk about enlarging your circle of influence in Chapter 3. Now, that's another concept that may not be familiar to people. Could you elaborate on what you mean by circle of influence?
Well, my circle of influence includes those people who know me and love me and will talk about me. Here again, I may be in that circle of influence for the plumber. It isn't that I'm necessarily using his services over and over and over. It's just that I know him. I know his work ethic. I feel comfortable introducing him to my friends, to my family, to my business associates. And so I will talk about him. And that's what you want. You want people out there who will talk about you. You know, I believe there are two kinds of people in this world, Melanie. There are those who know me and love me, and those who ought to.
I love that one, too.
So my job is to convert as many of the latter to the former as I can. Well, I can't possibly talk to everybody, so I need to enlarge my circle of influence. I need people out there talking about me who can talk to others so that by the time they get to me, they already feel like they know me and they already love me. You know, I love the Internet because you can Google Becky McCrary and you will find out so much information about me. You can find my website. You can find my Facebook page. You can find LinkedIn. You can even find Twitter. So, you know, by the time you have read a little bit about what others say about me and then also my take on things, because that's really what Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook is all about. What am I doing? What's important to me? And who do I love? Because those are my friends. Those are my tweets, you know, my tweebs, I guess. And all those people that I'm connected with. So mm-hmm. enlarging your circle of influence is just made up of people who know you, who love you, who talk about you, and who help you. So every one of us decides, we make a conscious decision as to whether we want a little tiny circle of influence, you know, because we want to keep it a secret, or do we want a huge circle of influence? And with me, I just want it huge. I want to open my inbox for my email like I did last night and get an email from somebody in Pennsylvania. I've never met this person, but he can say exactly who was talking about me and where they met me or what they remember about meeting me to say, we need you to come speak for our convention. Are you available these dates? And, you know, when people are out there saying, oh, I saw Becky, I absolutely loved her, she made me laugh, she made me cry, she made me think, she made me do something differently when I got back into the office the next day. That's what I want people saying. And when other people hear that, it doesn't matter how much I charge. All that matters is that I'm available for that date and I can get to where they want me to be. And they have to have me. So I think your circle of influence is certainly your business associates, but it's also your friends. It's your family. Do you know how hard it is, Melanie, for me to explain to my family what it is that I do?
Yes, because my family has the same challenge understanding what it is I do.
I know it. And you just want to walk around with your bio mm-hmm, in your hand
yes.
and share that with your mama and see if she can tell anybody else what it is that you do.
Exactly.
It's a struggle, but, you know, I'm not done yet. So
there we go. And we're constantly evolving.
Always.
And yes, that word of mouth of, you know, encouraging people to, if you've had a great experience, to share that, because that's huge. As we said earlier, that personal recommendation from someone else and providing that excellent service is that a key step to getting there. I don't want to go too far down that road yet. Although, you know, we've only got about 24 minutes left. That just is, time flies, Becky.
You know, I don't understand that, because somebody says, Becky, I want you to speak for 45 minutes. I speak for 45 minutes. But I now, you know, over time I have learned I cannot speak for 45 minutes. I have to plan how long they're going to laugh, how many
yes.
minutes that's going to take. Am I going to be able to get right back to it, or do I have to make a comment about their laughter? And it's just, it's amazing. But now, you know, I can speak for 4 days on customer service and never tell the same story twice. That's an accomplishment.
Oh, absolutely. And, oh, you are such a great storyteller.
I just talk about my own experiences. I talk about my family and my life in corporate America. And for some strange reason, people seem to identify with my stories, or perhaps just find some solace in knowing that my life was worse than theirs. And it makes them feel better.
From the research into the brain and learning, and the chemical makeup in your brain, the chemistry in your brain, when you're having a ha-ha moment is the same as when you're having an aha moment. So that laughter sets people up. They're already ready to learn something new.
Yes.
And so being able to use humor, it makes learning so much easier. And when we enjoy something, we tend to remember it better.
Absolutely. But, you know, honestly, the biggest reason I want you to laugh is because I'm going to be here a while. And so I have to be able to enjoy what I'm doing. Otherwise, this is just drudgery for me. And it's like I was in Houston a couple of weeks ago and was going to be there for the whole day. It was a whole day of customer service for a company. And someone early in, as I was meeting them as they were coming in, you know, and they said, are you going to talk the whole time? And I said, oh, yeah. And they said, oh, gosh. I said, and you will absolutely love it, because if you don't, it's going to be a very long day. She came up to me afterwards. At the end of the day, she came up and she said, I wasn't ready for you to stop. She said, I'll stay here, you know, all night long if you will keep talking. And I said, well, you know, that's fine, except the plane leaves in 2.5 hours, so I have to get.
Oh, my goodness. So let's see, with our just this little bit of time left, I do want to touch on the fears that we talked about, and that's in your chapter on follow-up. Once you've connected with someone, the chapter's titled Follow-Up is Not for Sissies, and I love that you use quotes at the beginning of each chapter. That's a personal love of mine, is to be able to share the appropriately wise words of other people, among my own. And
right.
I'm a collector of quotes, which is why I've commented on a couple of yours that I'm sure I'll be putting in my emails and saying. And the nice thing is, by the way, I wanted to also give your website, Becky, when you mentioned it earlier. It's Becky, B-E-C-K-Y. McCrary is M, I want to say this right, M-C-C-R-A-R-Y.com.
Correct.
So that people can find you there. But let's, if you would, take a few minutes and talk about your ideas around the fears that get in people's way when it comes to doing follow-up.
Oh, gosh. You know, people want to go to the networking events, and they think that's a sales call. And it is so not a sales call. The call, the sales call, is the follow-up. And the business is in the follow-up. So that is so critical. And yet people will get back to their office, and they have collected all these business cards, and they sit there and watch their phone and check their inbox 700 times in a minute because they're waiting for people to contact them to be their customer. And we've got to get over that. I never ask someone to call me back because they've already got a job. And I know that when I'm calling, selling my training services and my speaking services, that they may or may not be in a buying moment. And so my job is to just pique their interest and get them excited about doing business with me. And if it isn't now, then one day it will be. I got a call one time from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Birmingham, Alabama. And the voicemail message said, Becky, this is Linda Nelson at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Birmingham, Alabama. Would you please call me? This is my number. Now, Melanie, you can imagine that I stopped breathing when I heard
mm-hmm.
that message. It's like, oh, my God, what have I done?
What did you do?
Are there witnesses? you know, can anybody prove anything? I was a nervous wreck by the time I called Linda. And when she answered the phone and I said, this is Becky McCrary from Greenville, South Carolina, she said, oh, Becky, thank you so much for calling me. I heard you speak 5 years ago in Birmingham, and now I am finally in charge of our staff training for this year, and I just knew that I wanted you to come and speak. It's like, oh, my God, of course. I'll be right there. But, you know, we set ourselves up just making ourselves so afraid of that follow-up. And just to kind of pull from the book a couple of them, I think the number one fear why people don't follow up on those meetings that they encountered at networking events is the fear of being rejected. The fear of being rejected. We all fear somebody saying, oh, well, yes, I've got your card and I'll call you if I have a need for you. And yet last night they were laughing and having such a good time and said, oh, we have got to have you come in. We have got to sit down and talk about what you can do for us. And then when you call, it's like they don't know who you are. Well, sometimes I think that's because we expect them to remember who we are instead of setting them up to remember who we are. So getting over the fear of being rejected means that you know, living by that word-of-mouth advertising so that when you follow up with people, they want to know who you are, and they want to know what you do, and they want to know that you are a professional and that you deliver every time. And you know, I follow up with people that I got a really good vibe from. I don't collect business cards when I go to events. As a matter of fact, and I don't pass mine out either unless you ask me for it. Basically because, you know, I don't want you to throw me away when you get back to the office. I want you to ask for it because you're really serious about following up. And another fear that we have is the fear of being interrupted. You know, that we think that when we call and we've got our script down pat and we want to tell them everything that we do, that they're going to stop us, that they're going to ask questions. And it's like, well, yeah, it isn't about knowing our script. I mean, you know what it feels like when somebody calls you and you know that they're reading to you. And you, maybe it's even a product or a service that you're interested in, that you would love more information on it. I have so many times tried to ask questions, and one particular caller said, well, I'll get to that in a minute. And she went on, and she was talking about something else, and I said, well, you know, I've read that on your website. And I asked another question, and she said, if you will just let me finish, I believe that I will address your questions.
Ouch.
And I said, you know, I think we're done. I think we're done. So when we're so afraid of being interrupted, when we're telling them everything that we have and everything that we can do, okay, don't do that. Instead, get them involved in a dialogue. Ask questions, get them talking about what they need, who they've used for that in the past, how that worked for them, and get them excited about doing business with you, because not only do you ask great questions, but you also can identify with the pain that they feel and the uncertainty that they feel, and you can address those with your professionalism. So I think facing fear is one of the things that is difficult for everybody. I mean, some people make a good show of not being afraid, and yet they are. And I think that if we just say, you know what, this isn't about me. It's about them. They have a need, and I know that I am a great fit for their need. My job, then, is to convince them of their need and of my ability to work with them and put them in a better place.
And that makes wonderful sense, and it takes some of that pressure that people put on themselves off when you switch the perspective that you're using about that follow-up conversation.
And isn't your job to make the other person feel comfortable? So if you can take pressure off of them, if you can put them at ease, then they don't see you as a salesman. They see you as a partner, someone who can help them look good. When I was talking to a meeting planner not long ago, and you know, I knew that I was in. I knew it. And so I told her, I said, my job, remember, she said, is to make them laugh and make, and I said, no, my job is to make you look good. Because when your association members enjoy the conference, you look good. And sometimes people will catch me doing that. Somebody will come up and say, Becky, I just loved that. And I would say, tell Sarah. And so by the time Sarah, who hired me to come in and do that training or do that keynote presentation or speak at that luncheon, when she has had 12 people come up to her within 20 minutes of my presentation to say, I loved Becky. You did such a great job. You have got to bring her back. Gosh, Sarah looks good. That's my job.
And that's, again, when we think about how what we do can help others and putting the focus on others, then we really do get out of our own way.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you think about your own experiences, it kind of goes back to you talking about the storytelling. When you can tell stories of when you have been in a situation and how you got out of it, then it makes other people believe you when you encourage them to get out of it. You see, so many times people would sit there and say, oh, but you don't know me. You don't know my situation. You don't know what I'm dealing with. You don't know what's going on at home. You don't know what's going on in the office. You know what? We don't have to know exactly. We just have to put ourselves out there to let them know that we have been through some really difficult times. And we lived. So if we can do this, you can do this. And that gives them permission to let things go that they feel like are holding them back. I was at Camp NSA a couple of weeks ago out in Phoenix, Arizona. This is an intense couple of days, two or three days training for the presidents-elect of the different chapters around the country. And, I mean, we had somebody there from Singapore. We had several from Canada. But most of them were the U.S. chapters. And I had the opportunity to tell them a story about my grandson, Andrew. It was his first day to climb the magnolia tree in my front yard. And my husband picked him up and lifted him enough so that he could get to the bottom branch, and then he scooted up, and I stood there taking pictures of him, you know, as he climbed up into that tree. And he was way up in that tree and was just so excited about the view, how far he could see, and it was so beautiful up there, and it was so quiet up there, away from the street noise. And then, you know, we talked him down and told him once he was back on the ground that he could not climb that tree unless I was out there with him or my husband, his poppy, was out there with him. Well, about 20 minutes later, his younger brother came running into the kitchen where I was and said, Grammy, you have got to come. Now it's Andrew. Well, I go running into the front yard right after Evan, and I called Andrew's name, and I didn't get a response. And I looked at Evan, and, you know, he can't tattle on his older brother because, you know, there's a code, a brother's of honor. And so the younger one just kind of nodded his head toward the magnolia tree. So I walked over, and as I'm getting closer to the tree, I hear this barely audible voice saying, call 911, call 911, call 911. So I'm under the tree, and I look up in it, and I can see him. I said, Andrew, quiet. He knew he wasn't supposed to be up in that tree, Melanie. Mm-hmm. I said, Andrew. He said, Grammy, I'm stuck. You need to call 911. I need the fire truck with the great big ladder. They have to come get me out of the tree. And I said, darling, I can see you. I can help you get out of the tree. No, I need the ladder. And I said, no, I'm here. I told him, I said, just take your left foot and just stretch as far down as you can. He started, but it, all he got was air, and so he pulled his foot back up, and he said, I'm going to fall. And I said, no, you're not. Just take your left foot. I can see you, Andrew. And so he stretched a little bit further, and finally, as if by magic, the limb appeared under his foot. And I said, now move your left hand down. Now move your right hand down. Now let's move your right foot. And I talked him down. And, of course, once he hit a couple of branches, then he picked right up on it, and he just scurried down the tree. And once he was safely in my arms, he looked up in that tree, and he looked at me, and he said, Grammy, did you see me? I was incredible. And I said, you know, so many times people don't know where the next limb is. You don't know when the economy is going to pick back up in your market. you don't know when the medication or the surgery is going to take care of everything. You don't know what it's like to get through the process of losing your parents or even your children. There are so many times that we can't see what's around the corner for us. But if we have that circle of influence, there is somebody below us who can see us, and they can see where the help is, and they can talk us down if we will trust them to do that. And just sharing that story with these presidents-elect to say, every one of you just went up that magnolia tree. But the council, the chapter leadership council that I serve on, every one of us is a past president of a chapter, and we've all been there. And we are all standing here on the ground to applaud you when you're up there and so in awe of the view, and to talk you through those times that will come up when you're not sure what you're supposed to do. You don't have to call 911. You just have to call your CLC. And I think, Melanie, we just have to learn to call each other and to depend on each other and to allow other people to help us. But so many times in business, oh, we put on such a good face, and we tell people, oh, everything is wonderful. Oh, I'm having my best year ever. And you know we lie because we don't trust people to help us. So I think part of what we do with relationship networking on purpose is to develop that circle of influence so that people will be there for us that can step up and help us when we need it, and also to give us the privilege of being there to help them when they need it. But it's all about being on purpose. You don't just fall into relationships. You don't just stumble across business associates. You find them when you're looking for them. So do it on purpose.
And that is a wonderful story to illustrate how powerful it is to both know that there is help available and it's okay to ask for help, and then to trust the offers, because like you said, so often we feel like we have to do it ourselves and be independent, and really none of us can do everything. So the more that we can, that idea that it's a cycle, that in order to be open to receive, we give, but we also have to receive. It has to go around, and sometimes we forget how wonderful it is for people when they can give to us. And to be able to allow that, as well as to look at how we can help other people.
What a gift. What a gift to allow others to help you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And oh my, Becky, we only have left about 7 minutes, 6 minutes. And so in our last few minutes, if people wanted to reach you, because I have a lot of listeners who will download the MP3, they'll do a search later and find you. If they have questions and they want to follow up with you, how do you prefer they contact you?
Oh, email me. That's probably the best way. That's Becky, B-E-C-K-Y, at Becky McCreary. And that's mccrary.com. And then, you know, if they just want to hear my voice, oh my gosh, they can call me. That'll be fine. And that number is area code 864, and that's in South Carolina, so that's Eastern Standard Time. 864-967-3705. Again, that's 864-967-3705.
And I will add that Becky also has some recordings available, so you can hear Becky again. I'm very excited that after I heard a seminar that Becky did, I got a couple of of the recordings to take with me so that I could review them. And so if they were interested in those recordings, Becky, they're available on your website, correct?
Yes, they are.
So there you go.
And if they want just a taste, I'm on YouTube. Who knew?
Oh my God.
My grandchildren, so they think that's so cool that Grammy is on YouTube. But it's just youtube.com/ Becky McCrary. And be sure and rate it, you know, or make a comment or something. Because I just got them up there. They've only been up about a month.
Ooh. Okay,
yeah.
Well, yay. Congratulations.
Yay.
Nice places to visit. So in our... one quick question. Would you say that you're living your passions, doing what you love right now in your life, Becky?
You know, life is too short to do what you find to be a drudgery. I absolutely love what I do. Even though travel is not as glamorous as it used to be, I still will fly to Seattle or Las Vegas or Burbank, California, or drive to Atlanta or even Columbia, South Carolina, just for an opportunity to speak. I absolutely love it. And my second book, A Passion for Your Profession, will be out in spring of 2010. And then the customer service book, Unimaginable Service, will be out by the end of 2010. So, you know, once I figured out that I had something to say, you know, that's the speaking part. And then, gosh, they can't remember all of it, so write it out for them, and that's the books. And you know, over the years, gosh, I've been doing this now 13 and a half years, honey. It stands to reason that I've written enough on this topic and told enough stories on these topics that I've got more books in me. So it's time to get them out there.
Oh, and Becky, I would love to have you back when your next book comes out.
I'd love to come back, Melanie, because it's a whole different topic. I could tell new stories, you know?
You could tell new stories, and we could share your new book. So in our last few minutes, Becky, what key ideas would you want listeners to take away from this interview today?
You know, I think the absolute key is to let people know you, not just your current job title, but let them know you. Every one of us, I mean, at any point in time, we never know when a contract will be canceled, when a company will close, or when our job will be terminated. At the same time, we never know when we'll get a contract, when a company will open, or we'll get that well-deserved promotion. I think relationship networking on purpose allows you to be ready to act when the timing is right. So do it on purpose and expect to see the abundance.
Becky, it has been such a pleasure having you as a guest, and I'm excited to have you back again. Thank you so much for your time to share with our listeners.
Melanie, it's been my privilege. Thank you for having me.
And I wish you continued success with the speaking, with the training, with your writing. And we'll look forward to connecting with you in the next couple of months as your next book is getting ready to launch. And again, I highly recommend Relationship Networking on Purpose to my listeners. It is so full of practical strategies. And even if you think you're already networking pretty well, like I said, I was impressed with how many things now I need to go out and do that will help me network more successfully. So thank you so much, Becky. I wish you continued success.
Thank you.
And to my listeners, next week, Marianne Hess will be joining us to update us on the Rainforest Project. The Global Climate Change Conference will be in full swing during next week's interview. So there are some links on the website. And while you're out there checking out those links, check out Becky's videos on YouTube. Until next week, please take action on something that you heard tonight. Rate the show, invite a friend, and if you have an interesting topic that you think might be a spark for someone else, please let me know. You can reach me at Brain Bonanza, BrainBonanza, @gmail.com. And you're also welcome to visit both BeckyMcCrary.com to learn more about Becky, and brainbonanza.com to learn more about resources that I have that may also support your continued success. So please take action on something you've learned, and until next week, please stay safe. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.